This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
We're not quite to the power hour, but it will feel that way because Jay Billis is going to join us, and we are 1 hour away from big, humongous announcements. West Durham.
Gargantuan.
Yes, sir.
Gigantic.
We are in charge.
Yeah.
From an hour from now, we will announce the Women's Basketball Awards.
All the big ones.
The big ones.
Yeah. Not cinematography. We're going for the big ones.
We are here to deliver.
Yeah.
1 hour from now.
Only one game on the slate last night. Duke beat NC State at Cameron to avenge their 22-point loss by winning a 19-point decision. 88-69, the final last night at Cameron Indoor Stadium.
But the game was certainly closer at the half until Duke went crazy in the second half, put up half a 100 shots, 63%.
Right.
Mr. Number 2, Stanley, put a dunk, which he dunked it with his ankles last night, which was unbelievable.
Went from knees to ankles?
Yep.
Okay.
That's how high he got up last night.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
Come on, you have to admit, that was awesome.
It was really good.
Yeah. This is Virginia, who had nothing to do with the game.
Had nothing to do with the game.
But we just thought we'd throw in something there.
It's always good to see Virginia.
Tony Bennett guys are playing well.
They're playing good defense, so we wanted to show that.
But we talked a lot about Duke in hour number one.
Yeah.
We should talk more about NC State in hour number two, about where this was an opportunity for the Wolfpack last night to really solidify their NCAA tournament position. You lose the game. Now, you got there are no more screw-ups, right? You've got to take care of Wake Forest this week.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to go in the ACC tournament and go on somewhat of a run. And you also have to hope and pray that nobody goes crazy in another league and starts stealing bids come tournament time.
That's true. I think there are a lot of elements that are now on the wall here for the Wolfpack to contend with beyond themselves. But the only thing that Kevin Keats and his team can focus on now is the game-to-game aspect and let everything else play out. But NC State just had a hard time knocking down shots last night, especially in the second half when Duke made the run. I still think the momentum change was the four-point play, four-point run at the end of the first half that gave Duke a halftime lead. NC State just could not shoot it well enough in the second half to stay within reach of the Blue Devils. Meanwhile, Duke went to a zone. We'll talk to Jay Billis about that. Maybe one of the surprises of the night. Trey Jones had 15, 4, and 4. But they got help last night. Stanley had 18. Justin Robinson, Jordan Goldwire. I keep going back to guys other than Trey Jones and Vernon Carey. And really, I think that's going to be a difference maker for Duke as the year plays on.
You know, State had 5 guys in double figures last night.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Markell Johnson was a little loose with the basketball. He played great in the first go-around. 6
right.
turnovers last night. That's a problem. When he plays great, so does NC State.
Yep.
I just thought defensively, they had – when Duke went on the run – I mean, when you start scoring possession after possession after possession, I mean, you got to have a stop.
Yeah.
Especially in that joint, right?
Mm-hmm.
You let Cameron Indoor get on you, and here it comes, man. And Duke in the second half, I just thought was terrific.
Yeah.
I mean, they really got after.
By the way, we got a Packer and Durham gift yesterday. Bob Kerens, who lives in metropolitan Denton, North Carolina.
Yeah.
Years ago, Bob tells us, he wrote this book about Jim Valvano. And it's basically a book of stories about Valvano. It was published in 2005. And Bob was good enough to send this for our book collection here on the show. And we appreciate that very much, Bob. The other aspect about this book is it becomes appropriate now for the Wolfpack. Because Jimmy V is the one that coined the phrase, survive in advance. Right? Well, that's where Kevin Keats and NC State are now. It's a survive in advance. Except here's the deal. It's Wake Forest Friday night. It's next Wednesday in Greensboro. It's Thursday in Greensboro. It's kind of the moving parts now.
Well, you hope it's Thursday in Greensboro.
Right. You got to survive to advance now if you're NC State.
Yeah, NC State fans, players, coaches know that they can ill afford any more stumbles. I mean, and this is best case scenario, right? I mean, this is one of those deals that you got to beat a Wake Forest team that's feeling pretty good. They get the heels tonight. Somebody's walking out of Chapel Hill on a 3-game winning streak.
Yeah.
You got to take care of, again, Tobacco Road brethren coming to your house, which will be a positive thing. You got the call, right?
Yep.
So no more curse conversation.
Yeah.
That's
not my
done.
Fault.
It's not the 11-time winner's fault when he comes running in there with a broadcast on coming up. But NC State next week in Greensboro cannot be a one and done. It can't be one of those, hey, we were just here and grabbed us a barbecue sandwich from across the street, and it's been fun, but we should be in.
Right.
Here's the other thing that makes it just nerve-wracking for everybody. You don't know what's happening else around the country. Mm-hmm. Is there going to be somebody that's going to steal a bid? And in this crazy year of college hoops, and we've emphasized it a gazillion times.
Right.
Man, nobody is safe. You don't know how these conference tournaments are going to play out with the automatic bid. We could get a couple teams that have no business being in the dance, but they got hot for 3 or 4 days, and ta-da, I got my bid. Mm-hmm. That's what you got to really be concerned about in NC State. And you can't control that part. But what you can control is winning at least three more games. At least three more games.
Yeah, and if you do that, I think you're going to give yourself an opportunity, a real opportunity. So it is the old Jimmy V, survive in advance. And I would not say Wednesday gets you to the house. I'd say it helps. And I'd say Friday night's big. By the way, the two Friday night games, Georgia Tech at Clemson, Wake at NC State, globby.
Oh, totally.
Globby type basketball for you.
That's all we got is glob. Now we got, again, we have elite glob.
Mid glob,
lower glob.
Lower glob.
Mm-hmm. All glob now.
By the way, the other postgame topic last night came from Coach K. I've said this from time to time, and I'm not taking credit for, I'm just pointing something out here.
Take credit.
No, we're not taking credit here.
Go ahead, you can do it.
20 games in the ACC this year, first time ever. What was the impact of 20 games going to be like, and what was the math on 20 going to be like? Last night, Coach K got into a topic talking about the 20 and the chemistry project and scheduling.
We already have a tough schedule, so that doesn't influence us. And you got to be careful about it. You know, we have a whole bunch of teams that are close, and maybe with 18, they would have played someone else too, or whatever. Instead, we beat one another.
Okay, give me your thoughts.
My thought is that you're going to play 20 conference games. The league traditionally is really good, so you are going to beat each other. You've been beating each other for 60 some odd years. I think the bigger difference this year for the ACC is the lack of quality wins in the non-conference.
I agree. I think I'd go back to Dan Bonner on that.
Sometimes you think you've scheduled correctly, and sometimes those teams aren't good. I mean, it's kind of a dice roll sometimes when you try to do all this stuff. But this year's resumes of ACC teams non-conference is, I think, less than versus years past, in my opinion. So, hey, every year is different. I mean, the Big Ten's got 8 teams in this week's AP Top 25. That's a record for them. They're having a great year. They've had more opportunities based on the quality of their league. So
I want to go back to something though about the Big Ten. And I've heard a lot about the Big Ten here recently, and the kind of year they're having, and all that type deal.
You're not sold on that?
I didn't say that.
Are you trying to tell me you don't think the Big Ten's been good this year?
I think the Big Ten's been fine.
Fine.
I think it's good. Yes, it's
better
a good.
Than fine.
It's better than fine. But the Big Ten also has two schools in there that are not night in, night out very good.
You know, not everybody's great. Name a league that's ever been great from top to bottom.
But here's the difference in the ACC this year, and I'm not pointing this out to be the guy on the lawn, right?
I think you are.
Nope. I'm pointing out the fact that the Big Ten has had two teams, Nebraska and Northwestern, that have not been, I wouldn't say Nebraska and Northwestern at the bottom have been as dynamic as you would hope they would be. In other words, they've had the Boston College winless season, the Pittsburgh winless season, those type things that have happened in their league.
Yeah, those teams stink.
Right.
I'll be the first one to tell you. But they've got 8 teams this week in the AP Top 25.
So here's the question.
We did have the ACC. But again, I don't want to sit here and take the stance that I'm the pro Big Ten guy here, but
no,
I think you got to be realistic that this particular year,
the ACC did not handle November and December as well as they have in the past.
And who did the ACC play in November and December?
Big Ten.
And how'd that work out?
It didn't work out well.
I just want to end my – Judge Judy, I rest my case.
But you got two teams that are combined 4-32 in the league.
They're not – I told you, they're not very good.
Okay.
But the other ones are pretty good, Wes.
So what do we want to say then about – if you're Mike Krzyzewski, and his point is valid in his particular case, 20 games for them, it's just adding two conference games to what would already be a competitive non-conference schedule.
I like the 20-game conference schedule. Now, okay. I'm not a coach. Right. Now, I'm not living that world. I'm sitting here with you in the basement.
And we're, and by the way,
and we're fans.
The 20 games, sure. Is it because we have this channel in particular? Yeah, sure. Good bit of it.
Well, I think if you're
more inventory.
I think if you're a fan of ACC basketball, you would much rather see more conference games than you would, hey, this week we have Cupcake A&M on the schedule.
Okay.
My opinion. I mean, you could still go schedule, you know, Michigan State and Kansas and whatever you're in the mood for.
And by the way, I'm not diminishing Northwestern and Nebraska here. I'm just saying the ACC has the worst team in the ACC's got five conference wins. I'm saying that the Big Ten at the bottom.
But wait a minute. That same team had three this time last week.
It did. They won two, but you always said a lot changes when you win two.
That's right.
Okay. So if you stick with 20 in the ACC, then what's the backside of this? What's the responsibility of the programs? What's the responsibility of, say, a Boston College, a Wake Forest, a Georgia Tech that wants to make that move next year? How do you schedule? Because you're going to play the ACC Big Ten Challenge. You're going to play an exempt.
What's changed? I don't understand what's changed. You've taken away two cupcakes and you've put in two ACC teams.
Okay, but are we going to see an impact?
I think, for example, Mike Krzyzewski does a brilliant job knowing who he is, where their program is.
But you got to take them out of play. They don't count.
I'm making
this.
A point, though, Wes, okay. That if you're Duke, if you're North Carolina, you're Louisville, you're Virginia, you're Syracuse, you should have a mindset that, hey, you know what, we're elite. Mm-hmm. We go play elite. Now, I'd probably take Syracuse out because, let's be honest, Jim Boeheim has never been very comfortable jumping on Beast in non-conference play.
Right.
But they've also been very good, for the most part, in conference play. And that's where you figured, hey, that's where I'm going to get my W's. And I think everybody's scheduling philosophy would be different. You know, what works for Brad Brownell doesn't work for Mike Krzyzewski. What works for Jim Christian doesn't work for Roy Williams. So you got to schedule accordingly, but hey, you also got to know I got 20 conference games and the Big Ten ACC Challenge. Now, if you want to go jump in the deep end of the pool and go play somebody of note, hey, go for it. If you think that's where your program is.
All right.
And if you're not, then you can go load up on Cupcake U and hopefully be 10-1 before you get cranked up on conference games.
All right. Here's the other point I'm going to add on this. If we get to Selection Sunday and it's four teams.
That's probably what we're looking at
today. The first year of 20 games.
Mm-hmm.
If we get a three-year body of work where the average NCAA pool from the ACC is five.
Okay.
So that's 15 teams in 3 years, obviously.
Right.
Is that okay with you if it's five?
I hope we get eight or nine. But you know what? To get eight or nine, you got to go beat somebody of note. If I said to you, hey, rattle off the ACC's best non-conference wins, forget the 20 that we know we're going to play.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the best five non-conference wins for the league. You know what? You'd have to think
hard. You have
hard.
To hard find five.
That, yeah. To me, that right there is the reason you have four or five going to dance as opposed to eight or nine.
Especially when we're talking about a team who is now 6-12 in the league having one of them.
Right.
And maybe one that's 5-13 having the other one.
And let me tell you what's going to be funny. In my opinion, I think the ACC next year, men's basketball, mm-hmm. is going to be out of sight.
I do too.
And you know what's going to happen in November and December? This league's going to wear people out. And we're going to be sitting here a year from now, assuming we're still employed by ESPN and or SiriusXM. And we're going to be sitting there going, remember last year how we talked about how only four teams got in or five got in? Man, this year we're back to eight or nine. You know why? Because they jumped on non-conference people of note and said, you know what? We're better than you. This year, it's been a down year in terms of that department. Non-conference wins in this league, with the exception of Duke early, are kind of few and far between. Let's be honest about that.
I think
that's why you're at four. That's why there's only four ACC teams ranked in this week's AP Top 25. That's why we're only talking about whatever bracketologist you want. There are four or five teams in the dance. We traditionally have seven, eight, or nine because teams six, seven, and eight have got quality wins outside the footprint, whether you're playing 18, 16, 20, or whatever the number is for conference play.
So a convergence of storms has caused this more than anything else.
I think
the storm of 20, the storm of inventory of players, all those things.
We knew before the season started, right, at the tip-off day in Charlotte, when mm-hmm. we asked the coaches for our segment, give us one word to describe this upcoming season. And while all the answers were different, they all had the same theme. don't know.
Yeah.
And it's the first time in the history of this league we didn't know because of talent or the quote unquote lack thereof based on what you lost from a year ago. Yeah. The league will be back to kicking sand in people's faces next year deep. And you know what? I would not put it past anybody from Florida State, Louisville, Duke, or Virginia to still kick sand in people's faces and get into Atlanta. I don't think that's crazy to think that they can't get there.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Chester in the green room. Otto in the Christmas decorating room. We got Robert over here teasing.
I know what some of you are saying today, too.
What's that?
Durham's wearing socks.
Are you?
Yeah, I got socks on.
What happened?
I got to go to a luncheon.
Oh, I hate when that happens.
I got to go to a luncheon.
You got to go to a luncheon, and I got to go kill a copperhead snake.
Oh.
That's what I'm doing after the show today. That's going
to
be like the
there's a movie to be made in the backyard of this man's house today.
And snakes are not high on my list. And my daughter, who loves snakes, she used to work in the nature museum here. Charlotte. I sent her a picture yesterday.
Before she moved to Atlanta, no, so not, she can see nature now.
No, no, no. Yeah, you got it. I sent her a picture of my snake, my buddy back there.
Yeah, how'd that go?
I said, is this a good one or a bad one?
Bad.
She wrote back in like 2 seconds, bad, copperhead, get rid of it. I said, ooh, that's not good. So that's my deal. Be like a Mutual of Omaha after the show.
By the way, shout out to LaChana Robinson. Shout out to the former Demon Deacon star. Tweeted out, good morning, beautiful people. Just waiting for Mark Packer and Wes Durham to announce those awards.
9 o'clock.
Guess what, LaChana? You got about 40 minutes.
Yep. Get you a good seat. Get your popcorn ready. Yep.
She's fabulous, by the way, on the air. Does a great job.
Ladies are all good.
All right. You like that little quote going to the break?
My head started to hurt.
All right, here we go. Let me set the stage. Last week, NFL Combine, right? Mel Kiper Jr., ladies and gentlemen, offered up some thoughts on Clemson's freakazoid.
You mentioned that remarkable time. That's rare. The question is, what positions are you going to play in the NFL? Inside, outside, linebacker, safety. He can do it all. As I say, he may be too versatile for his own good.
Mel, look, I'll be brief. That's why I'll be brief. I have unbelievable respect for what you do, okay? The history, the heritage of the National Football League draft, the Kiper newsletter. I knew cats that were subscribers and they get the thing in the mail back in the 80s and early 90s about the draft. Look, you've forgotten more prospects than I'll ever know. But this guy can play for anybody, anywhere. And I think he's going to be a superstar in the National Football League. He is not too versatile. If I were a defensive coordinator, and I'm not, but if I were, I would take him right now and ask him where he wants to play. That's just my thought, Pack.
I hope to grow up one day and be too versatile. Wait, what are we talking about? Can you play or can you not play?
I feel like Roddy Jones wants to call into this show.
This dude can play at so many positions. That's the beauty of what he brings to the table. It's not a negative. It's a positive. Holy mackerel. What are we doing?
Well,
that's all I'm going to say.
I will say sanity at some point did come back into the conversation at Lucas Oil because Todd McShay offered up his prospects for Clemson's play anywhere defensive star Isaiah Simmons.
6'3.5". He's almost 240 pounds. He ran a 4.39 in the 40-yard dash. He can play inside the box, but he also can play the single high safety. You watch that Ohio State game. The ability to go 35 yards and go make a play on the ball, you just don't see guys that have the physical tools that he has. With the speed that he has, anyone who's any good at being a coordinator in the NFL is going to know how to use this guy and will love how multiple he makes you on the defensive side.
In this particular case, that would be called two things, Wes. Advantage McShay. Come on. The guy is – the thing that makes him such a special player is his versatility. That is not a negative. In the NFL, with a bunch of smart guys, whoever drafts him has got themselves – not a good, a great football player. Dude's a baller.
By the way, McShay has him going fourth to the New York Football Giants.
That would be a great selection.
And a great place for him to play.
No question.
Gotham City, heritage franchise.
This guy is a player, man.
Holy smokes.
Too versatile, Wes.
Too versatile?
Radio, TV, print, too
blog.
Versatile. I'm not buying that in the second.
No.
At all.
No, he can play anywhere. Elsewhere among football notes, like the way we tie this together on this show, Manny Diaz opened up spring practice at Miami and apparently is got job one already planned out. Coach Diaz is looking to do one thing, and this is at the top of the list.
In terms of the quarterback situation, I think it's not all that different from what I've talked about a year ago. When we know, we want to announce. You know, last year that was after our second scrimmage in the fall. This year I can't predict when that would be. But we want to have, I've said this since I became the head coach, we want to have a starting quarterback at the University of Miami.
I highly suggest it.
I'm all for that.
But I understood his point in the press conference that, I mean, even for the bowl game. The week of the bowl game, it was still, and we're not sure who the quarterback is, and he doesn't want to put himself in that position. So in a perfect world, yeah, you love to know who your go-to guy is, but you got to go earn it, man. We'll see. Miami, I've said this.
But he wants a starting quarterback.
Well, he's going to get one, I hope. Better have one.
But did he have one last year?
Might have. All I know is when you're at the Independence Bowl, you probably didn't have one.
It was a turnstile at that position.
I understand it. My point to you is this, and I've said this since the season ended. In my opinion, I believe that the University of Miami will be one of the most interesting teams nationally in the offseason going into 2020. Nobody in their right mind expected the way that thing to end, the way it ended. You got the King transfer. You got other issues going left and right. This is a very, very important year for Miami football.
How in the world is De'Eriq King not the starting quarterback when the season begins next year?
He may very well be. You guys anointed him the second he decided to go there. Maybe.
He has to be.
Well, he may be, Wes. I don't know. We'll find out. I mean, the fact that we've already had some guys transfer in that department.
Rhett Lashley?
I like that move, too.
I do, too. And, I mean, this is like hand in glove. This guy is a machine now. Can throw it, can run it. RPO king, not De'Eriq King. He's the king of RPO. He's a handful now. You go back and watch the tape on this kid at Houston, and I understand American, but that was a pretty good league last year.
That league was very good last year.
Yeah. So,
but he didn't play in it.
No, he took the red shirt.
Yeah, so let's not get too carried away.
When the USS Dana Holgorsen rolled into town.
Yeah, just saying. Well, let's see how it plays out. You guys have already put him in this one spot. He may very well be.
All right.
I like the moves in the offseason with the staff, but Miami is going to be a fast – Miami and Florida State are national offseason stories. Forget just the ACC offseason.
All right, one quick note going to break. Tough deal for Duke. First spring practice, and Jalen Coleman, the running back, suffered an Achilles injury. No timetable on his return. Our best to Jalen Coleman of the Duke Blue Devils, who was battling for the running back position.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Jay Billis joins us.
Very versatile, Jay Billis is. It's one of the things that immediately comes to mind when I think of Jay Billis.
Versatility.
Is versatility.
Yeah.
Good to have that.
Yeah. Even though Mel Kiper doesn't think Isaiah Simmons may be too versatile.
Too versatile.
The guy who's nice enough to let Matthew Hurt wear his jersey number joins us now on Packer and Durham. Coach Billis, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
We're good. Kaheim, take me through that. But is that just spur of the moment? People always ask me if I write down stuff I'm going to say on the air, and I say, no, it just pops in my head. I'm going to go with popped in your head.
That was popping my head. I had no idea that Duke was going to play zone. I mean, some games, you know, you might be a shoot around. You say, hey, we may do that. You find out what teams are going to do. I had no clue that he would pull a zone out. But after they couldn't protect the lane. I just started thinking about what, when the zone came out in the second half and it was clear that they were going to stay with that until it wasn't working anymore. You kind of started thinking about, you know, where it came from, and it was in part, in large part, Jim Boeheim's influence on Coach K when they worked together, USA Basketball. So I was trying to weave Boeheim into it, and that somehow that came out. I'm lucky it was just that.
I liked it. I thought too. It was good.
Thought it was clever.
By the way, what time did you get home last night? Because I'm normally up about 2:30 or 3. I figured if you drove home from Durham, I had a cup of coffee with scrambled eggs. We just got an early start to the show. He could have been hanging out with us in the basement again.
I could have been, but I thought about driving straight to the basement and just sleeping there. But my wife was with me, so I thought I had to drop her off first at home.
That's bad.
You could have done that. That would have been good. We'd have made that work. All right, let's get into this whole big picture thing. Where do you think NC State is big picture today?
Well, I think they were on the cusp of the tournament. I think they're right there in a big, big mass of teams from multiple conferences that have a decent chance to get in. But as you guys know, I mean, you know, this time of year, people are always asking, what does my team have to do to get in? And you know, the easy answer is you got to win. Right. And that was an opportunity. I don't think it's in any way disqualifying. I don't think you're expected to win that game as a bubble team. But here's where I look at it, and you guys tell me what you think of this. Here's where I look at it differently than I believe the committee looks at it. First of all, I don't care about a team's non-conference schedule. If the committee says it's total body of work, then it's total body of work. Then you shouldn't have to worry about it. If I've got a great conference schedule, what difference does it make who I play in the non-conference? If my conference stinks, then I better play somebody outside of it. That's the way I think it works. If we're saying total body of work. The other thing is, I don't care results of games that are outside of the top 100 unless you lose. You're only going to play top 100 teams in the NCAA tournament. So I want to know how you did against the best teams you played. And that's all that matters. The other stuff doesn't matter unless you lose. And all of these teams that are on the bubble have proven one thing beyond a reasonable doubt. They can all lose. So the question is, who can you beat? And one of the most interesting things to me about this is, if you look at NC State's had some really good wins, but I think Clemson's had just as many, if not more, really good wins. Clemson's just lost more games. And so how do you balance that? And that's going to be the trick for the NCAA tournament committee is trying to find the teams that are best against the best teams. Because consistency in this, none of these teams have been consistent. It's just a question of who can you beat? Can you beat good teams? And that's going to be the test for all these guys is if their quad one success isn't really good, or better than the other guys in the same pool as them, then I just don't see what kind of case you can make in this.
Jay, it's interesting because, you know, I've always subscribed that there need to be more basketball people on the basketball committee, you know, to put this thing together. You've got four ACC teams that are locks, and right now you got about five that could be the fifth team. Well, four, because Georgia Tech's obviously going to take the postseason sanction. All of them have interesting notes. The one that probably cost itself the most the other night was Notre Dame, because they really don't have any great top 100 wins. You bring up Clemson and NC State. You know, Syracuse got a win or two here or there. They won at Virginia, arguably one of the hotter teams in the country right now.
Yeah, everybody can point to certain things that they've got, and that's really the test. And your point about the basketball committee as opposed to the football committee, and not a surprise, the football committee is not ruled by the NCAA, so they can do what they want. The NCAA basketball selection committee, they do a good job. I'm not complaining about the job they do. The question is, can a better job be done? Mm-hmm. It's not what's good, it's what's best. And the real issue that you have with that is it's a plum job within the NCAA structure. It's not just about selecting the teams. That's just what we pay attention to. That's a power job for ADs and commissioners and the like that goes way beyond just selecting the teams. It's, you know, they select officials, they do venues, they do all these things that have to do with the tournament. And the tournament is the sole source of revenue for the NCAA. That's all they got. Mm-hmm. And so it's a big, big political deal for them. And so they don't want anybody outside of their administrators getting that job, and it has very little to do with selection of teams.
Jay, do you think Georgia Tech made the right decision yesterday?
I don't think they had a choice, Pac. If they see, this is where the NCAA, you know, and sort of the judicial process that the NCAA has is kind of screwed up in a way. So the Georgia Tech is waiting for their appeal. I think they're going to lose the appeal no matter what, and they're getting slow played. So if the appeal goes beyond a certain date and it's not decided, it goes into next year, and then the sanction goes into next year. So really what Georgia Tech was looking at is they're I don't know what the percentages are, but they're very likely that their appeal is going to get denied and the sanctions are going to stand. So the sanctions would have been applied next year. And so they're basically saying, all right, you know, we're probably going to have to take this. So let's just take it now. That was the calculus when their chances of making postseason this year were pretty slim anyway. You might as well take it now rather than carry all of this mess into next year.
Jay, I want to go to two schools here. First of all, we touched on Virginia, 9-1 in their last 10. Unbelievable, you know, possession to possession game against Duke last Saturday. Cavaliers are in Miami tomorrow night here on ACC Network. I mean, Tony Bennett's it's just phenomenal what he's done. I mean, and I don't know why we didn't think it was, you know, a possibility, probably because they lost all the star power from a year ago, but here they come again, I guess.
Well, I mean, I thought it was possible at the beginning of the year. I think we all thought they were going to be pretty good. But then when you watched them play in the first 2 months, I mean, I had them right before Christmas and they lost to South Carolina, and you're wondering how are these guys going to score. Mm-hmm. I mean, they couldn't score. And you're thinking no defense is good enough to win without scoring. You know, it's like asking a pitcher to win games without ever scoring any runs. They were really struggling. And Tony Bennett, I can't remember the name of the tennis player that had this thing tattooed on his arm, but it was a quotation he was using with his team that essentially says, if we fail, let's get up and we'll fail better. And we'll, you know, essentially let's keep plugging. And they've kept plugging. He stayed positive and they've gotten better and better. They're still, as you said, Wes, one possession games. I mean, they're not what they were last year, and that's okay. But they're way better now than they were 2 months ago. And it's really stunning. I mean, it's just a fabulous testament to a group of players that has continued to fight and continue to get better. And I was looking at some stats last night, and you know, the one thing that stood out more than anything else was Kihei Clark is averaging 6 assists per game, and he's third in the ACC, and they have the least amount of possessions in Division I. I mean, it's remarkable the way that young man plays basketball and the efficiency at which he plays. And he's got the ball in his hands all the time. The decisions, really incredible, the job they've done. And then Jay Huff comes within one rebound of a triple-double against Duke. I mean, they're getting contributions that are really, really fantastic. It's been fun to watch. You know, and some people say fun to watch. They're winning 52-50, but it has been fun to watch.
All right,
let me just throw something in real quick. Speaking of fun to watch. Jay, you've watched a gazillion ACC games.
Oh, boy.
Where would you put my man Stanley in the all-time ACC dunkers?
He's up there. I probably committed blasphemy. yeah, exactly. That's a good I was probably blasphemous by comparing that dunk where he reached behind his head to catch the ball behind him and to Grant Hill's dunk in the 91 title game against Kansas. But that's what it reminded me of. He's not a big guy, but he's just got springs that most players don't have, most leapers don't have, and that's why he's probably the key to their team. Honestly, you kind of know what you're going to get from Vernon Carey and Trey Jones, and he's the guy that has to be the consistent scorer. And that's really where Duke is I think, can really, you know, step forward to where they were earlier, where we felt they were earlier in the year. And that's just getting consistent production from players. You know, they're production has been inconsistent from guys, and they're trying to push buttons and find whoever's got it that night. And I'm not sure that the way they've been playing the last 2 weeks is a great recipe for going forward. But they made a really positive step last night, I thought.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Saturday night is interesting, especially if Carolina wins a third in a row tonight, against Wake Forest here on ACC Network. Jay, how much do you buy into the role they're on and the way they're playing? And, I mean, are they a threat in Greensboro just on momentum if they win, what, three of their last four going to the house?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the way Carolina has played and the way they played against Syracuse especially was kind of what I was saying before, that this may not be one of Roy Williams' vintage Carolina teams. Like, they're not a championship contender in my judgment. But we've all talked about this. I thought they were way better than they were playing. Mm-hmm. And that's what I meant. Like, I think these guys are playing the way they're capable now. There's probably a ceiling there, and they're bumping up against it. But in this year, could they do something crazy relative to their record and win the ACC tournament? Absolutely they can. They got to keep everybody healthy throughout the tournament. But if Brandon Robinson doesn't twist another ankle or all that stuff, they've got as good a chance as anybody outside the top four. I still think the top four teams are head and shoulders better, but that doesn't mean they can't get clipped in a postseason event. But it was just nice to see Carolina make some shots. And because that's been the biggest thing outside of the injuries is you know, knocking some open shots down. And Christian Keeling's been a different player. His confidence level has just soared, and he's aggressively hunting his shot now. And Cole Anthony's making really good decisions, at least the last several games. So that's been fun to watch.
Yeah, and I think it adds another layer, obviously, to Duke and Carolina on Saturday night, which you'll see Mr. Billis and Mr. Shulman. With I believe Holly Rowe will join you guys Saturday night at Cameron, 6 o'clock on ESPN, and of course our Nothing But Net group follows at 8 here on ACC Network. Jay, thank you for the time as always. We look forward to seeing you in Greensboro next week, of course.
Always a pleasure. I hope the basement moves to Greensboro. You guys in a little U-Haul out there? What are you doing?
Well, I thought I'd just come by the house with all this stuff that Wendy's got you moving out to bring it over here. I just thought we'd borrow it and just take it up to Greensboro. Hey.
That'd be great. We could set up a little pop-up museum. I'm sure there'll be a lot of people in line to see that.
Hey, we are going to, I will tell you this, just for the record, we are going to take a couple of the mementos from the basement to the set.
Yeah.
And under strong consideration right now is the second team All-ACC tournament plaque.
Yeah.
Well, you better have some security around that thing, because that will be like the Hope Diamond. People be trying to steal that thing right out from under you.
Jay, we won't have security, but we do have a $10 price tag written on it, if that helps.
Yeah, that'll be on the front table. Everything must go.
That's it.
See you soon. Thanks as always.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Jay Billis joining us. Oh, man.
He thought we were kidding.
No, we're going to go
$10.
Yeah. All right, don't forget, coming up top of the hour, we're going to announce the major, not the minor pack, all major here.
This
major,
is a big deal.
Yeah, big deal. Major award winners for ACC women's basketball coming up at 9 a.m. exclusively here on Packer and Durham.
And we haven't promoted it, but there are some that will join us in the Power Hour.
You don't say.
How about that? How
right.
We orchestrated all that.
Yeah.
Kept it under wraps, too. Not one time has it slipped in the first hour and 45 minutes of the show.
But on the way to the Women's Awards at 9 o'clock, guess what you have to sit through, folks? The weekly edition of Barker Bite.
Packer and Durham.
There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy.
We're about 11 minutes away from the announcement of the Women's Basketball Awards that you will hear exclusively on Packer and Durham on ACC Network. Should be outstanding. And we, believe it or not, we actually know the winners. We've kept it under wraps today. And a couple of them will join us in the Power Hour.
Covering up the winners.
Now you do that. That'd be good. I appreciate the versatile...
Jay Billis. Yeah, he was awesome. Really good. All right.
Ready, roll? Let's do it.
Bark or bite. Ladies and gentlemen, for the Bark or Bite segment, That means we go to the Packer and Durham headquarters. On the left, please welcome from ESPN Deportes, Josh Macri. And on the right, Drew Brooks.
Barker Bite, you guys are actually at the headquarters. We're in Bristol.
No, we're in the basement.
It says basement, and on under your picture,
right, but Packer's
says,
basement is the headquarters for Packer and Durham. We're at the headquarters for ESPN.
Incorrect answer. This basement would be the headquarters of Mrs. Packer's home.
Fair enough.
I just happen to live here.
Well, and Wes's suite, too. We can't forget about Wes's
suite.
That's true.
And the copperhead in the back.
Copperhead in the backyard. Hey, what would you pay for the live video of him chasing this copperhead this afternoon?
Wait a minute. Is Packer chasing it, or is the copperhead chasing Packer?
Well, I will tell you this.
Uh-oh.
Hold on. Let me write it down. Got it.
If I'm not one for one, and it decides to go on the attack.
Tomorrow it'll be Ann Durham.
If you thought Isaiah, no. If you thought Isaiah Simmons had speed running the 40, you've not seen me. Cause I've got a 4.39 40 when the copperhead decides, oh, the big fat guy missed.
Mekhi,
my turn.
Mekhi Becton, Mark Packer.
No way, dude. I am Isaiah Simmons.
Well, Pack.
If I whiff on the copperhead.
I know that you don't read these questions beforehand, but you just provided a perfect segue because our first bark or bite is bark or bite. Isaiah will run faster than 4.39 at Clemson's pro day.
Bark, he won't run.
He doesn't need to run, does he?
That's exactly right.
I think he already won the show.
He's not going to run. He's Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, I wouldn't even mess with it. I'd just say, hey, listen, you guys weren't impressed enough with a 6'4", 240-pound man running a 4.39. What else do I need to do? I think Wes is right. I wouldn't touch it.
Calvin Johnson borrowed some cat from East Carolina's shoes, set Indianapolis on its ear, and never ran another 40 the rest of his life. Yeah. Isaiah Simmons will never run another 40-yard dash the rest of his life.
Unless he's going to go tackle. Bold.
Unless Travis Etienne wants to run him for a pizza.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely
okay.
Bark.
Yeah, bark.
Last week, you guys laughed us out of the Bristol headquarters when we suggested that anybody other than Leonard Hamilton could be ACC Men's Coach of the Year. That said, given the current run, bark or bite that Tony Bennett should be the Coach of the Year in the ACC.
What is there an echo here? What's the problem?
Problem.
Leonard Hamilton is the ACC Coach of the Year. Tony Bennett's done a nice job. Leonard Hamilton, by the way, Leonard Hamilton you can find this week in the top 10. Leonard Hamilton goes WW, going to finish first, number one seed, ACC tournament. Nobody was talking about Florida State as the top team in the league. Here we are with a week to go. This is not even a conversation. I'm not telling you Tony Bennett or somebody else couldn't get a vote, but Leonard Hamilton is the ACC Coach of the Year.
Correct. Outside the top four, has a chance to win the regular season for the first time ever. He would be the coach of the year.
Yeah, I'm not sure why that's a question.
Okay. Well, by the way, we'll get to find out who the women's coach of the year is here in about 6.5 minutes.
Well, you can't say our cross promotion is not the best.
And by the way, I'll give you another hint.
And the coach of the year will join us. Yeah,
will appear on this show coming up in the Power Hour.
That's right. Okay. That's right. All right, next one, bark or bite. Regardless of whether or not it's NC State, the ACC will get 5 teams in the NCAA tournament.
I'm going to bite because I think at the end somebody makes a bit of a run in Greensboro and the committee has to fill the bracket.
I hope you're right, but I'm going to bark. I'm worried that some team sitting there at 14-17 is going to win some league championship and grab a spot. It's that close. It's that close in the bubble for the ACC to get the 5 spot. I hope you're right, though, Wes.
Well, they got the regular season champion NIT waiver in play, but, yeah, I understand what you're saying.
West
Coast Conference or something.
I'm just
like
concerned that,
yeah,
that in this topsy-turvy year of college hoops – that we're going to have somebody steal a bid in a conference tournament this week or next week. That's what bothers me. But it's going to be close.
It's going to have to be, I will say this, it's going to have to be a mid-major because all the automatics toward the bottom, if that's an upset there, the regular season champ goes to the NIT. But I see what you're saying. We're talking like West Coast. We're talking, you know, somewhere along in there.
Somebody that you're not even talking about gets hot for 3 days and gets down in net and they're in the tournament.
Or somebody in a Power 5 comes from the mid to lower part of the standings and wins, which I'm not sure happens, but, you know, makes a run.
Yeah, I mean, NC State last night had, as Jay said it, we've said it, had an opportunity to really kind of get in the comfort zone. Mm. Now they got to really work.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, under 90 seconds, try and get through these last two here. Let's see if we can do it. Bark or bite that last week's upsets ensured that the ACC will not have a single team on the top line of either NCAA tournament.
Bite, bite, bite.
Bite. I agree with that. I don't think there's a one in the group. Yep. Bite.
Somebody on the men's side had to run the table. It didn't happen. They all lost. And I said when we threw this out, men or women, my comment was that I thought the Louisville women had the best chance to getting one seat.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. All right.
All right, last one, bark or bite. Mark can catch the Copperhead. Quick answer.
Oh, I don't want to catch it. I want to kill it.
You got a bite? You bite?
I don't want to catch it. What am I going to do if I catch it?
Okay, Mark will kill the Copperhead. Bark or bite?
Oh, bite.
That's a
total
bark.
Total domination.
That's a bark.
Total
it's a
domination.
Bark if I ever heard it. It's a bark.
Well, I'm going to tell you
what. Because it's
do.
A two-part process.
I'll tell you what I'll do.
Catching and killing.
I'll take a picture.
That'd be good. We look forward to it.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.